podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The podcast with Dan Gardell and Greg Evans.
Hello and welcome back to 1874, the podcast. I'm your host, Dan Bardell, joined by The Athletic's Greg Evans to talk about all things Aston Villa as we normally do. Of course, we're mainly going to cover Aston Villa 3, Brentford 3, not my favourite Saturday of the season at Villa Park, but we'll come on to that. This show is, of course, sponsored by NordVPN. If you want to go to 1874.io/NordVPN, you'll get a huge discount off your plan and you'll also get 4 months for free. And the good news is it's completely risk-free because Nord offer a 30-day money back guarantee. Greg, it's been a while, international break. You, of course, on golfing breaks as well, but now you are back in the UK. I saw you were back in the UK, but to be honest, thought you were still in Thailand because I saw that you were still playing golf, albeit at the Belfry.
Yeah, still trying to play as much as I can, although I haven't actually got out and played, you know, actually played out on the course because it's just so wet. It's rained every single day that I've been home, and I've been told that all the time that I was away, it rained as well. So, yeah, nice to be back because it's good to
be. No, it's not. You absolutely
it's good. There are certain things that is, you know, you miss a bit of normality, don't you, when you're away for so long. And it is nice to be back, but yeah, I do miss the weather.
So media trend, off the record answer that I was given when we came on compared to the on the record.
No, because like, you know, I was missing various things. Yeah, it's hard when you're away for so long. In some areas.
Yeah, are you back at work now? Like working again?
I am working, but not officially, no, because you get 6 months off through paternity leave through the Athletic.
You must have. You've had your 6 months there. You must have had your
No, it started in January. So I officially returned back to work in July. But I think I always said to myself I'd have sort of half of the 6 months off, and then the second sort of the final 3 months, I'd slowly start getting back into work. I think it's hard, isn't it? You don't want to switch off too much. You know, with Liverpool, the team that I cover now, mainly, you know, still challenging for three titles. You know, you want to stay in touch with it. So yeah, I'm back at work, but not officially writing yet.
Still got your eye in very much so with Aston Villa, and 3-3 at the weekend against Brentford, probably not a score that many people would have predicted. Certainly not a score people would have predicted in the 46th, 47th minute. But I'm still not sure really how I feel about it or what I think. Obviously, we're recording this on a Monday morning now. Still not sure where I lie with it, because obviously, you know, you should never be in the position of being 2-0 up and then in the space of 10 minutes being 3-2 down. That just shouldn't happen. I'd level that Brentford probably haven't scored 3 goals in a game all season. Villa haven't really capitulated like that other than the Manchester United game that I remember. And then there was a brief capitulation against Luton as well, but they went on and won that game. But certainly not at Villa Park. We haven't seen anything like that for a long, long time. I'm pleased they got back to 3-3. Good resilience. In years gone by, that simply doesn't happen with Villa teams. But I'm still just a bit baffled by that 10 minutes and what I saw, Greg.
Yeah, I mean, I am a little bit as well, but I also do think there have been some signs creeping in recent months, really. And I think that's a lot down to the injuries that Villa have, you know, been dealt with. And I think that was a game that Villa really missed Kamara. You know, you can look at the defensive issues or the defensive mistakes, and yeah, there were plenty of them. But I think if you have really solid cover in front, which Kamara usually gives Villa, it makes it a lot easier for the defenders. And I think what you're also seeing is, you know, Konsa, yes, he can play at right back and has played there a fair few times this season, but we know that he's much more comfortable at centre back, and just those slight nuances in the changing of his positions, you know, it might just make things a little bit harder for him. And you know, three of the goals came from that area, didn't they?
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not solely blaming Konsa, because you need to look at the whole defensive unit, really, because there was you know, so many errors there. And it's just, I mean, you got to give Brentford a little bit of credit. They really struggled in the first half. They changed their approach. They went more, you know, proactive and really gave it a good go in the second half and got their rewards for it. But Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of games that Villa have started to look like they're going to throw things away when, you know, when they're two goals up. It's almost a bit of a worrying position to be in, which it should never be, should it, at a team who are fourth or fifth.
That wasn't what they were doing. If it, you know, Villa Park, at the back end of last season and the start of this season, they went 1-0, 2-0 up and you thought, game over. Game's won here, clean shirt.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, this was the first game since, I think, early February 2022, where Villa had gone two goals up and not actually gone on to win the game. So even though there have been some signs creeping in that, you know, a little bit of vulnerability there, you look at the Burnley game, which, you know, Villa eventually went on and won, the Man United games, and then Luton, Nottingham Forest, again, which Villa, you know, went and got the results eventually. But there were some worrying signs there. I think it's just a good reaction that they didn't lose the game, because that point really keeps them ticking over. And, you know, that they haven't lost any ground in terms of the Champions League race, because, you know, Man United could only draw as well. And I just think with six games left, I still believe Villa only need probably two or three wins and that'll be enough for them.
Yeah, I still just don't. I want fourth. I know fifth in all probability will get Champions League football, but there's something about finishing fourth that I want to do it. And we've been fourth now for a long, long time, it feels. We've been in the top four all season. I'd feel like an element, a tinge of disappointment. Look, obviously, if we get Champions League and finish fifth, great. But I still, in my head, I don't feel like that's certain for whatever reason. But I just feel we have lost momentum in the second half of the season. There's no getting away with that. The first half of the season was brilliant, but that was never realistically going to continue, because I think what Villa were doing at that time was unprecedented, especially at home. But almost feel by finishing fifth, you get people turn around and kind of saying, like, oh, well, you know, in seasons gone by, you wouldn't have got Champions League. There's something about it that I still really want to finish fourth. Villa still can finish fourth, but there's no getting away from it now that Tottenham are the favourites for that position.
Yeah, Tottenham are coming on a bit stronger than I thought they would be now. I thought they were impressive yesterday, got the job done again. Obviously beat Villa, you know, that was the key one, wasn't it, when the two teams came head-to-head, and it was just such a convincing win for Tottenham in the end. But I'm looking at the bigger picture. I think if Villa get Champions League, if they finish in fifth, you know, fourth or fifth place, it's improvement on last season. It continues that run of you know, that momentum building that Nassef Sawiris and Wes Edens have wanted since they took over at the club. And look, you know, how great would it be to qualify for the Champions League and then potentially still have that Europa Conference League final to look forward to after the Premier League season has finished, you know, which would really put the icing on the cake almost and just give this Villa team the justification, I think, that it deserves, that it is a really strong team. But yeah, look, you're right. They have lost a little bit of momentum. I think injuries have obviously played their part in that. And also, I take your point. I do think Villa were going to slow down at some point because, you know, if they didn't, they would be still in the title race, wouldn't they?
Yeah, right. Let's go back through the game, and then let's go to the first half. I think team selection was interesting, I felt, but I agreed with the team selection. You could see in the warm-up that McGinn was very much up alongside Watkins when they were doing their passing and finishing drills, which meant Tielemans stayed in midfield. But I think we saw in the game before for Brentford against Brighton when they drew 0-0, they've obviously kind of adapted a little bit. They've wanted to make themselves a bit tougher to beat. So you always kind of got the feeling that Brentford would be a little more defensive in this game. So I kind of like that. You know, instead of playing Tielemans as the 10, he went for McGinn, who's going to get up alongside Watkins in the box and roam around a bit more. And actually, when a team's harder to break down, I think having Tielemans as the deeper midfielder is actually better for Villa in home games.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can't knock the first half performance, can you? No. It was great. It was everything that you wanted from Villa. They were in control of the game. They were quite tight and narrow, which is typically what, you know, Emery likes. They had a very good shape throughout the first half, worked the ball well. Were quite patient in their build-up play, and then, you know, got the goal from Watkins that put them ahead. And then from there, you kind of just thought, this is pretty much going to be business as usual for Villa at Villa Park. You know, Brentford hadn't won for eight games. They didn't have Tony in the team. I didn't envisage what would happen next, really.
Yeah, it was great to have McGinn back as well, because they've missed him across the three games. And we know what went on to happen with Douglas Luiz. Obviously, Villa rested a lot of players in the game before against Manchester City. Were you surprised to see Douglas Luiz start? Did it feel a bit of a risk to you?
No, No, I think, well, you know,
but obviously now we know he ain't going to be able to play for the next two games, which is a huge blow.
And I just think it's, yeah, but you know, you've got to play your best players when they're available. And yeah, the conversation, they would have had the conversation before the game, don't do anything stupid. And for 96 minutes, he didn't. I mean, he just
pounded
just,
the game.
It was just silly, really, you know, but. It's frustrating for Villa as well, isn't it? Because every week it seems like they have some sort of setback, and they just can't seem to get their full team out. You know, you think of where they might have been had Torres not got injured. You know, leading up to that New Year period, when at the time they were still in the title race, albeit with a very long way to go. You know, you think what it might have been like if Mings had been available for the season, because I still do believe that he, you know, he's Villa's strongest defender.
Right.
You know, Ramsey being available for the season, Kamara missing out, McGinn picking up that suspension at a really important time. It's just been setback after setback after setback, but Villa have put together a very, very strong and expensively assembled squad now. And it shows that, yes, Unai Emery's a brilliant manager and he's managed to get the best out of them. But typically when Villa have missed players, they have always had a replacement to come in. There's been a couple of times where, you know, against Man City, for example, bringing in Eric Boonham, not necessarily what you want, you know, a youngster with not that much experience. But I think when Villa have had injuries, they've been able to sort of replace them quite well.
What's upsetting me at the moment is, and this has been a pattern for a long time now, is every time we get one back,
so McGinn
comes back from suspension, this guy, then he's back and then Louise is out now.
Yeah.
I don't think Villa's injuries generally have gone under the radar, but I accept that everyone gets injuries and suspensions, and other teams other than Villa have had it bad at various points in the season. But just the Villa's just seems consistent through the season. And when someone does pick up an injury, it's just tended to be a season ender. And I think that's what's cost Villa the most.
I mean, yeah, you're right. You know, it's been from the very, very first game, hasn't it?
You have set the time.
Buendia just before the season, then Mings on the opening day of the season. I think Villa had a pretty good run after that because they didn't have too many key injuries, you know, didn't have too many. But then they started to build up, you know, inevitably because of the amount of games that they played. You know, they're always going to pick up injuries when you're playing. You're asking players to play sort of 45 to 50 games a season with the Cups and in Europe. So across the board, it's been a mad season for injuries, hasn't it? I think Arsenal are probably the only team who have got away with it but haven't suffered, you know, too much. You still look at Liverpool, who are joint top of the Premier League, and they're without Alisson, without Trent Alexander-Arnold, without the Jota. Three of their main important players that would be playing every week aren't playing, and they're, you know, still joint top of the Premier League. You look at Newcastle's season's been completely decimated by injuries. And Manchester United have had problems as well. So Villa aren't, and Tottenham obviously had that really bad spell, didn't they, at the start of the season. So Villa aren't alone in this, but it just feels like it's been staggered throughout the season.
Yeah, it just
never stops. And the more I'm watching Villa play now, the more I feel like they're really missing Kamara. That feels like the big one for them.
Yeah, and I felt it was a control performance in the first half, a bit more like the home games of the last 12 months or so. And Villa weren't ever really threatened by Brentford. Lots of possession. One thing I've noted, and look, Brentford were basically defending in the north stand in the first half. They couldn't have been any deeper. They couldn't have got any more men behind the ball. But Villa pressed and probed and tried to do the right things. But one thing that, it's not annoyed me, that's not the right word. One thing I found a bit worrying, probably from January onwards, is when now Villa were passing the ball in the first half of the season, especially at Villa Park, it all felt like it ran like clockwork. Everyone would get the weight of the pass right. Everyone knew where each other was going to be. And maybe there is something in the injuries now where it is a different 11 every week, a different back four and whatnot. But we've almost gone a little bit sloppy, and that rhythm seems to have gone from Villa's play. Now, you think, I always think of that goal they scored against Arsenal in the 1-0 game at Villa Park. The way they came forward, every pass was perfect. Every player knew where each other was going to be, and that move ended with McGinn swivelling and putting the ball in the back of the net. We don't feel as free-flowing. I get as well, you know, when you're playing against a team that is so deep, it's not as easy to do that. But this isn't just been a problem in this game against Brentford. It just hasn't been as fluid in the second half of the season at Villa Park, and A lot of passes were misplaced in that first half. Louise and Konsa, people who've been very, very consistent all season. I actually thought this was Konsa's worst game of the season, generally, defensively and in terms of on the ball. He had a difficult day. But are you saying the same thing as me, that just as rhythmic as it was?
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's down to three things, really. One, the injuries. You know, Villa have not got the same team every week that was almost... We almost knew what Villa's best team was, didn't we, at the start of the season? And, you know, give or take one or sometimes two players, it was typically the same outfield lineup. So everybody knew their positions. They were in a bit of rhythm. They were in that flow, and it was working really well. And the patterns of play that they worked on in training, they didn't need to adjust too much because the team wasn't changing too much. Now what you've got is players like Konsa's having to switch out of position a little bit. So he's position in the, you know, actual position in the field is different. So it's a slight change of passing and the way he's moving around a little bit.
We did beat Manchester City and Arsenal.
Yeah, I know. But I do feel that he's a better centre-half, and he knows that he's going to be, he knows where he's certainly more comfortable at centre-half. The second thing I think is that there is a little bit of tiredness there now. You know, a long season, lots of Villa's players are international players and have been away on international duty, have played international minutes. So, you know, that tiredness now is building up. There's going to be inevitably a bit of fatigue there because they've gone through a very long Premier League season already, a European campaign, international fixtures, as I've already mentioned. And the third thing mainly, I think, is that teams have just started to figure Villa out a bit more now. They realise that yes, at the start of the season, Villa were this free-flowing, forward-thinking team in great form. But now opponents are pretty scared, you know, facing Villa and have
to get a lot of respect, don't
they? Yeah, they have to really, really work hard to find a way to get either a point against them or to go and beat them. So, you know, the analysis will be a lot more detailed, and they'll be looking at opponents typically now will be trying to stop Villa rather than going there and trying to beat them. So more of the onus is to stop Villa, and that will probably play a part in that, I think.
Yeah, Villa did get the goal. McGinn cross, Watkins header. A bit of confusion as to whether it was Watkins or Bailey's goal. At the time, I wanted it to be Bailey's goal because he was in my fantasy team and Watkins isn't in there at the moment. No, he's been in mine all season. Then he got injured and I took him out and I haven't found a way to get him back in yet. So ideally, I would have liked that to have been Bailey's goal. But, you know, Watkins does it again. Not the greatest piece of goalkeeping I've ever seen. Every now and again, I'll watch a team, whether it be on the telly or whether I'm at Villa Park or wherever, watching the game. And I always think, oh, we're so lucky to have Emi Martinez. Mm-hmm. Albeit he didn't make a single save at the weekend because every shot on target in that game went in. But, you know, I think one of the reasons Brentford have suffered this season is the change of goalkeeper because Roy was so consistent and so good for them. But, you know, great to see him back on the score sheet because, again, I feel like I might be making this up, but I know he has had an injury, but Watkins hasn't felt the same. Even in the Spurs game, he didn't feel the same as he had done in previous weeks. But great to see him get on the end of something and get on the score sheet in the first half.
He's just a consistent goal scorer, isn't he? You know,
his numbers are a joke now.
Yeah, I mean, what is he, second in the Premier League now?
So he's second for goals, but he's top for
goals and assists. Yeah, so I mean, you know, what an amazing scenario he's now faced with, you know, potentially helping his team qualify for the Champions League, but also maybe going on and winning the, you know, becoming the top goal scorer in the Premier League. That, no matter what we think of Watkins, we just didn't expect that at the start of the season. We didn't expect him to be there. So his numbers are frightening. Always comes up with the goods, you know, and I think Emery noticed right from the very start, if he just played a little bit more centrally and all the others, all of his teammates did the jobs that they needed to do the right way, then he would get the chances and eventually get the goals. And, you know, that's proven the case. He's just invaluable now, isn't he?
He's become a bit of a bit of a sniffer, kind of scoring those typical number nine goals. Header's kind of been added to his game as well. Rez, I don't know whether you know this. I might put you on the spot. Has header's been something that he's been working on? We know he had that strikers coach, but I feel like he's scoring more headers this season than he ever has done before.
Yeah, no, I don't necessarily think so. I mean, I know they do a lot on set pieces and, you know, one of Villa's stronger headers of the ball is always Ollie Watkins. You know, out of the three that it was last year, it was always Watkins, Buendia and Mings, those were the three that were so desperately needed in defensive areas because, you know, they won a lot of first contacts. But yeah, look, he's brought that to his game. I don't know if he did that specifically with his striker coach, but I know that he was working on more finishes with his feet, certainly. And what we see now is that he can finish with both feet, can't we, perfectly, brilliant. And also with the head. So, yeah, he's got everything.
Yep, so Villa go into half-time. That's good. 1-0 up. I'm taking selfies with the people that I sit with at half-time with a big smile on my face, thinking, hopefully I'll get to post this. At the end of the game. Generally, I've started to take more photos of like me and my dad at Villa games and stuff because I realised that we've been going for like 31 years now together, and I realised that like it's not going to be forever. It's not going to happen. His mobility is getting worse. He struggles. He still comes every, like I've tweeted the other day, he fouls his fitness test every single game to come to Villa Park, but I still take him anyway, and just started taking more photos. And he said to me the other day that he started taking a photo of the scoreboard at the end of every game, just to like, he's got like a memory that he was there. So yeah, just a little tale. I've just started to do that and post it to my social media so that there's a record, because we've done it for 31 years. But there's very little record of us having done that. And if we get to the end of the season and Villa do something special, like win the Conference League or qualify for the Champions League, I'm going to have some stuff to look back on. Villa really, you know, did the perfect thing that you can do. You've scored right before halftime and completely changed the face of the game there. And then the one thing Brentford wouldn't have wanted is don't concede in the first few minutes of the second half. It's something Villa have done themselves quite a lot recently. They get themselves 2-0 up as well. And you really do start to think then, brilliant.
Perfect,
isn't right,
it?
Here we go.
Perfect scenario.
They've done really well there. Rodgers is off the mark. That's going to give him some confidence. It was a very well-taken goal. What have you made of Rodgers in recent weeks? You can see there's something there, can't you? It's probably the off-the-ball stuff that's not quite there at the moment, but he took his goal with real aplomb.
Yeah, brilliant goal. Let's focus on that first, because you know he deserves the credit for that. Lovely control, lovely touching, and the way he moved past the defender and then just kind of gave the goalkeeper the eyes, didn't he? And then put it in the other corner, and you could see how happy he was. Actually, you know, a young lad moving to the Premier League. You know, he's had his big move to Man City that didn't obviously work out. He's now back in a Champions League chasing team, playing regular. And yeah, getting that goal in front of the whole end, fantastic, lovely goal. I think he struggled a little bit. I think, you know, he's looked a little bit out of place. He looks like a new player, looks like somebody who is still finding his way. But he's had moments, you know. I think back to the Man City game. You know, he set up the goal there, didn't he?
Yeah.
And looks like he's starting to find his feet. But I always said when he came in January, I thought he's going to need this period running up to the summer to get used to playing in this Villa team. And I think if Ramsey wasn't injured, he wouldn't be starting games. So he's been sort of fast-tracked a little bit and he's learning on the job. But the signs are good and he's a very young player with potential. So, you know, Villa could have a real star on their hands if he develops the way they think he will.
I noticed in the first half, actually, there was a spell when we were attacking, and he kind of came short for the ball, but McGinn was trying to usher him to get wide. Emery was screaming at him to get wide, and he didn't do it. He stayed where he was, and the attack kind of slowed down because of that. I guess they're the things that are going to take time for him to pick up on. And you know, it took other players time to get used to Emery, even like Emi Martinez. It took him a while to get used to what Emery wants, but yeah, he must be doing something and have something, because Emery wouldn't be picking him at the moment. You know, there's some good players sat on that bench at the moment. Emery doesn't have to pick him, but he's choosing to start him over the likes of Diaby. I know Diaby wouldn't play in that position. They shuffle things around. But, you know, he's choosing him to play at the moment instead of him, isn't he? So he's, you know, he's got something.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, he wouldn't have signed him, would they, if they didn't rate him? And, you know, that's the position that's now become available. Yes, Villa could have tweaked things around and, you know, potentially put Zaniolo there or even Diaby, even though they're, you know, that's not necessarily their position. But Rodgers was signed to play in this position. So, you know, why mess around too much when he's doing okay? And look, you know, this goal will certainly help him.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all agree that he's probably started more games than perhaps was planned.
Yeah, and that's because of Ramsey's injury, isn't it? You know, if Ramsey was fit, then he'd be playing.
For example, McGinn could have played left and Diaby could have started that game, but Emery is choosing to start Rodgers, which is a good sign because he's obviously seen something in there that he really, really likes. Right, I want to delay getting into the capitulation. So the only way I can really do that is by inserting the NordVPN advert, Greg. So let's hear more about NordVPN, our sponsors. 1874 is proudly sponsored by NordVPN, so when they and you can't watch it, we want to help you. NordVPN is a secure and private service which works on pretty much any device, including your laptop, mobile, or television. So if you want to watch some live content, it allows you to appear like you're in another country. And whilst you're connected, no one else can find out what you're doing, including your internet service provider. Beyond this, the service also has threat protection baked in to protect you from intrusive website ads and malware, which is pretty handy for you. As part of NordVPN, support 4 months for free. This also includes Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. All you've got to do is go to 1874.io/NordVPN and sign up. All the details are also in the description. As always, we're very grateful to anyone that signs up. We know that money is tight, but if you think NordVPN will help you out, it will also help keep the channel running and help us too. Right then, Greg, so let's do it. Let's relive it. Villa are 2-0 up, as I say. Life is very, very good at this point. The sun is shining. Everyone's having a lovely, lovely time. And then a mad nine minutes, all down the same side, as you said earlier. Conser side, I do think he had an uncomfortable day, but all three were crosses as well of some description. That's a bit concerning, you know, that they didn't learn their lessons. And Emery kind of alluded to that with what he said after the game as well.
Yeah, it was a really sort of disjointed period, wasn't it? You know, you look at Torres and Carlos, and obviously, you know, Konza, it was down his side. But the three of them really, they seemed very loose. They weren't well connected. And look, I did mention this earlier, but I felt it was more about Brentford being brave and really pushing players forward. Because if you look at, I think, the second goal, there's an overload of attackers against defenders. And why Villa are so open at that point when they would have been 2-1 up, but you know, it's a bit of a surprise. And obviously, Ollie Watkins said after the game, didn't he? We need to learn to get this big team mentality, really, where we're 2-0 up and we just go and secure the game. And I think over the course of the season, Villa have done that quite well. But clearly, you know, there were signs, you know, Forest, Luton, the Man United games, Burnley, where Villa have just looked a little bit loose. And this was a game where the same sort of patterns emerged. And I was looking at Torres and Carlos and I was just thinking, just get a bit tighter together. And, you know, they just felt like they were just falling apart a bit.
Yeah, look, we've conceded a lot of goals from crosses, from corners, from set plays. There doesn't seem to be a pattern in the type of goal that Villa are conceding at the moment. Look, they've conceded goals all season. We're nowhere near as many clean sheets as we were last season under Emery, where it just felt like we were churning them out week after week. I think we've already conceded more goals. I guess Villa are a bit unfortunate with that first goal as well, because although they didn't defend it well, you can never finish a ball like that again. If you try, he didn't even mean to do it. He just hit him on his standing foot and just finds the bottom corner. Jorgensen, he just almost looked embarrassed as well.
Oh, when, yeah. When he put it in face,
so
yeah.
Annoying. So lucky.
His face, it was just like he didn't know what to do initially. He kind of just went like that, didn't he? Shrugged his shoulders, but then almost tried to shake it off as if he meant it.
He doesn't score many, I don't think.
No, he doesn't. It was quite a funny celebration. Yeah, and Martinez looked pretty stunned, didn't he? Because he obviously wrong-footed him and he couldn't do anything about it. An element of misfortune there. But it's the way Villa reacted after that. They needed to be better after that, didn't they?
Your composure, and they just didn't do that. It got worse, if anything.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the way they turned it around, it was just such a crazy 10-minute period, wasn't it? I just didn't envisage that happening. I didn't see it after the way the first half went, and you know, the way they'd obviously gone 2-0 up so quickly after half time. But I put it back to a little bit of, yes, it was disjointed defensively, but I just felt like there just needed to be a bit more security from those in front, you know. Bailey was just not giving Carlos enough, not giving Konza enough protection down the right side. And it felt like that they just lacked a real solid defensive midfielder at that point as well.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Even when it got to 2-2, I was gutted, but I still think we can score again. So you just got to try and win the game. But when it goes to 3-2, I mean, Torres for the second didn't, even though he looked at him non-stop, didn't seem to know where Mbeumo was. Then the third one, just it's easy for Vissa to get that tap in, just way too easy.
Yeah, they were running on adrenaline then, weren't they, at Brentford at that point, and it felt like they had the momentum with them. And obviously, I was only watching, you know, the game. I wasn't inside Villa Park, but what was the reaction like? Because I'd heard from a few friends that were there that they were quite surprised with actually the way the fans had turned on some of the players at that point. What did you feel that at all?
I didn't feel that in the whole team. I'm the first person to sit here and say when those kind of things do happen, but I didn't. I think everyone was just in shock, to be honest. And I felt like they, you know, when the team started to attack again, they did get behind. I didn't really notice any players getting singled out or anything like that. It was a collective thing, as Watkins said at the end of the game. I just felt we were struggling, and the crowd was just shocked because you got the elation of being 2-0 up, and suddenly you're losing, and you can't understand how it's happened. I think the crowd was just in shock a bit, to be honest. And then I have a slight gripe with them. You know, I think the players, you know, have to take responsibility for what's unfolded on the pitch there. You know, only the second time I think I've ever questioned Unai Emery, and it's going to come in the space of probably just 3 or 4 weeks. And look, I say this knowing that Unai Emery knows a lot more about football than I do, and I'm, you know, not being negative about Emery, but it's just something that, you know, I found bizarre, is that it was 3-2. We weren't playing well. I didn't feel we were going to break them down, albeit, you know, Watkins scores a header and we do break them down. But he was planning a load of subs. So he had three subs ready to come on at the point while it was still 3-2 to Brentford. We then score and he tells them to sit down. So it was Diaby, Kane, Kessler, Hayden, and who was the third? And it might not have been Duran, actually.
Zaniolo was already on it.
Zaniolo was already on. Yeah, then he had three. Oh, it was the Moreno, so he was going to change both fullbacks, I think, was what he's going to do. So we had those three subs lined up: Kessler, Hayden, Diaby, and Moreno. We score. He tells them all to sit down. I think he still should have made those subs, because I get that it's those players that have got you back in the game, but you were obviously thinking at the time, this isn't going well, we need to inject something. You know, I, as I've said, I think Konsa was having an awful game, very rare for him. He obviously wanted to get a different right back on. And then he just aborted those subs completely. Yeah, 3-3, we had probably had a couple of attacks of any real substance. But again, Brentford went back, reverted to type and tried to defend deep and hit us on a break. They got Tony on by this point. Then when he did make the subs, you know, he didn't bring Kessler Hayden on, he brought Duran on instead. It was in stoppage time. So,
yeah, it felt like a bit too late at that point, didn't it? But I mean, there were a couple of good chances, weren't there? You know,
Luca Dean,
you had that one, yeah. And there was a bit of, it felt like Villa were pushing and Villa were going to be the team that got that goal if there was going to be a winner. I don't think they did anything wrong in their approach. I think they went about it the right way. They were quite patient. They didn't force it. Without forcing it too much, they tried to have a real go at it, but in a patient and controlled way. But I think at that point when Villa equalised, Emery just stopped and thought, right, I need a rethink for a minute or two. And then the longer he thought about it, a point actually is not a bad result in where they are at and where the game had unfolded. Yes, Villa would have been expected to go and win that game. Because it's Brentford. Yes, there would have been frustration that they didn't. But in the grand scheme of things, a point isn't actually that bad, knowing that Man United were then playing Liverpool the next day and that you know, they might not have gained any ground anyway. So I don't know. I mean, look, you know, I haven't spoken to him or asked him about that. But yeah, I just think I think he wanted a rethink for a couple of minutes and then move from there.
I guess my main query with that would be, I feel a bit sorry for Diaby.
Look, 3-3 is a complete, it's a different ball game to 3-2, isn't it? You know, you're back in the game and it's more about, you've actually got something to hold on to. Then you're not chasing everything. You're not necessarily chasing something because, yes, you still want to go and win the game, but you've actually got something to lose at that point. So, you know, do you need those three changes at that point? Because that's literally gung-ho, isn't it? You're 3-2 down. This is the last roll of the dice almost. We've got to go and change it. But
then he did make those changes in injury time.
But it was later, wasn't it? You know, when he'd had time to think and assess and where the game was at, how Brentford were going to react to the equaliser, etc.
I think Diaby will be frustrated. He's He's not done a lot wrong recently to be coming on in stoppage time in a game where, you know, we're behind. I think, as I said, I trust Emery completely. I think it's a bit harsh Diaby didn't start. And then to not be coming on until stoppage time, I know from behind the scenes that he's, when he initially got dropped against Manchester City, he was really, really, really unhappy about that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think he's kind of not alienating him. That's not the right word. But, you know, he's done well recently. You feel like he was just getting back to some of the form that he was showing in the first half of the season. Scored a goal last weekend against Wolves. And then you kind of feel like taking him back to square one by bringing him on in stoppage time.
Yeah, look, I agree with you. I think he should have come on a little bit. He should have come on earlier. But, you know, there were times where we were talking about Bailey earlier in the season, weren't we, saying that he would have felt this frustrated.
Yeah.
There's one position, really. The two of them very, very rarely play, do they? It's so... And then, you know, you've obviously got to think of the Lille doubleheader coming up on Thursday and then into next week. You know, is he looking at that thinking Diaby's going to be my starting guy there? Yeah, still get your point. Yeah, Villa haven't got the game wrapped up and you would have expected him to come on a bit earlier. But yeah, I think there are a lot of games left really still. You know, Villa have got six Premier League games left. They hope they've still got five games in Europe. So 11 games still to go. They still want some players fresh. Might have been a little bit of thinking in that.
Maybe, but even Durant, to an extent, you know, he scored against Manchester City. He made an impact when he came on against Wolves. But again, alienation is not the right word. I just can't think of another word. But he must think, and we know he's difficult behind the scenes as well. Durant must think, if I'm not coming on when we're 3-2 down against Brentford in the 69th minute or whatever it was, when am I ever coming on? No, and I don't like some of the stuff I've heard about Durant behind the scenes, but you've got to say there, probably that would be fair.
Yeah, I think so. It's just who you take off, don't you? You're not going to take Watkins off.
No, definitely not. He's brought him on alongside him before in games.
Yeah, I know, but then it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because you take a midfielder off and it completely opens up the game then for Brentford, and then they might go and get another goal and it's game over. So I can understand that, but I can also understand the players' frustrations because, look, players want to play. And, you know, if Duran's obviously got his goal in the previous game and will think he deserves more of a chance.
Yeah, right. I think that probably does us. I'll try and do a show looking ahead to the European game on Thursday. I've completely messed up Thursday. I can't go now. I've made a big error. Yeah, I've made a working error. So I usually do TalkSport 2 on a Tuesday. Got asked to switch days to help someone else out. And I was thinking, it sounds like ringing a bell for something, but I'm not sure what. But, I asked my girlfriend, you know, is anything, because we just moved house. I was like, anything to do with that? And she was like, no. Didn't even think to look at Villa might be playing. And then I had in my head that we were away first anyway for some reason, because we have been previously, and yeah, I've messed up. So now I'm working instead of, I won't get back in time. So my friend's going to take my dad to the game instead. Thank you, Martin. So
it's good. That's a shame that you're going to miss that, because I think it'll be a good atmosphere.
I might
get
back just in time for kickoff to watch it on TV.
I think it'll be a good atmosphere at Villa Park on Thursday. I think the fans will be proper up for it. It's not going to be easy. I think it's going to be tougher than Ajax.
It's going to be a lot tougher.
Lior in good form, you know, managed by a you know, very successful manager in Fonseca, who
interesting manager as well.
Who you know, Villa were keen on at one point, but he didn't fancy coming to Villa because they're in the Championship at that time when Villa were interested. You know, a couple of good players in that team. Jonathan David, obviously one of the hottest strikers in Europe. He's really found his form in the second half of this season. Presume we'll see him in the Premier League at some point in his career. Lots of teams interested in him. And good mix of experience and some young players in that Lille team. In good form, fourth in Ligue 1. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough game. Much harder than Ajax, I think. Yeah,
I think it's a really tough draw. I think being at home first makes it tougher as well. We haven't really had to navigate that. And I always think with a team like Lille, you'll look at them and think Villa are a better team than them.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, in terms of European experience, Lille have probably been in Europe, you know, more than Villa tenfold over the last 10 to 15 years, haven't they? So, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like they've just got more used to it than we are.
Yeah, I don't think there's too many players left from the title-winning team of 3 years ago, is it? 3 or 4 years ago? But, you know, yeah, you know, they've played Champions League football. They're in Europe most years, aren't they? And look, you know, the away leg's going to be difficult. The fans are, you know, right on top of you. They're really up for it. And look, you know, they're a very good, successful team at home. So yeah, tough draw. But look, it's Villa are into the quarterfinals now. This is the business end of the season. They know that get through this week. Yeah, it's a tough week. Two games against Lille with Arsenal in the middle. If they get through that, they've obviously got another two games in between the Brighton and Liverpool game. Liverpool game. So yeah, it's going to be a really hectic end to the season if all goes well for Villa.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried for, in some ways, actually being at home first probably helps in terms of the Premier League, not having the travel before you go and play against Arsenal, the Premier League's form team at the moment. That's a tough game,
isn't it?
We'll see what happens. You know, we'd rather be having these conversations about these exciting games, Villa, towards the top end of
and look, you know, Arsenal have got Bayern Munich themselves, haven't they? So it's not an easy week for them either.
I don't just feel like they're just at the peak of their powers at the moment, don't you? Like when we beat them at Christmas, you feel like they were a little bit of a sticky patch at the time, if my memory serves me correctly.
They did play well, didn't they? They probably deserved to get something from, well, they did deserve to get something from the game, I thought.
They're just churning results out at the moment, aren't they? With the ease it feels as well.
Yeah, but you know, football can change very quickly, and this is a season defining week for Arsenal as well as it is for Villa, because they get through the Bayern Munich games, and they get past Villa at the weekend. Then, wow, you know what a finale it could be for them.
Yeah, they're doing really, really well. Arteta's done a magnificent job there. Right then, Greg, thank you very much. Thank you to you. Thank you to NordVPN. Thank you to Adam. Thank you to everyone who's watching and listening as well. If you could do all the things that help the channel, like liking, subscribing, wherever you're taking in the podcast, commenting with your thoughts as well. Do you agree with the points that Greg and I have made throughout the show? Do let us know in the comments. And yeah, just liking as well. Liking even helps us appear in places we may not normally appear. So yeah, if you can do all those things, it would be very much appreciated. Hopefully you're glad that the content is back after the little break due to internationals, me moving and life just being all over the place. So yeah, we're back now, putting out the content again as consistently as we were before all the things I've just mentioned. If you are going to Villa Park on Thursday, no, actually, forget all that, because I will do a show before the Lille game, previewing it in one way or another. So watch out for that. And yeah, hopefully you've enjoyed the show. And yeah, have a great week. And as ever, only one thing left to say: up the Villa. Sports Social Podcast Network.